No, I suppose not. Does this change our mission profile? Not the directive, no. Kelvin Solanke and I still want one of those sequestrated colonists brought back to Durringham, but the timing has certainly altered. Where are you now? She datavised the question into her inertial guidance block. 25 kilometres west of Oconto village. Fine. Put ashore at the nearest point you can. We're a little worried about the boats coming out of the Qualheim and Zamjan tributaries. When we reviewed the satellite images, we found about 20 that have set off downriver in the last week, everything from paddle steamers to fishing catches. As far as we can make out, they're heading for Durringham. They certainly aren't stopping.
You mean they're behind us as well? Jenny asked in dismay.
It looks that way. But, Jenny, I don't leave my people behind. You know that. I'm working on a method of retrieving you that doesn't include the river, but only ask if you really need it. There are only a limited number of seats, he added significantly. She stared across the grey water at the unbroken jungle and muttered a silent curse. She liked the marines. A lot of trust had been built up between the two groups in the last 4 days. There were times when the ESA seemed too duplicitous and underhand, even for an intelligence agency.
Yes, boss, I understand.
Good. Now remember, when you put ashore, assume everyone is hostile and avoid all groups of locals. Solanke is convinced it was sheer numbers which overwhelmed the Edenists. And, Jenny, don't let prejudice inflate your ego. The Edenist operatives are good.
Yes, sir.
She signed off and picked her way past the wheelhouse to the little cabin which backed onto it. A big grey-green tarpaulin had been rigged over the rear of the boat to screen the horses. She could hear them snorting softly. They were agitated and jumpy after so long cooped up in their tiny enclosure. Murphy Hewlett had kept them reasonably comfortable, but she'd be glad when they could let them loose on land again. So would the team which had to shuffle their crap overboard. Murphy Hewlett was sheltering in the lee of the tarpaulin, his black fatigue jacket open to the waist, showing a dark green short-sleeved shirt. She started to explain the change in schedule.
"They want us to go ashore right now?" he asked.
He was 42 years old and a veteran of several combat campaigns, both in space and on planets.
"That's right. Apparently people are deserting the villages in droves. Picking one of them up shouldn't be too big a problem."
"Yeah, you're right about that," he shook his head. "I don't like this idea that we're already behind enemy lines."
"I didn't ask my boss what the situation was like in Durringham right now, but to my mind this whole planet is behind the lines."
Murphy Hewlett nodded glumly.
"There's real trouble brewing here. You get to recognize the feeling after a while, you know. Combat sharpens you. I can tell when things ain't right, and they're not."
Jenny wondered guiltily if he could guess the essence of what Ralph Hilch had said to her. "I'll tell Dean to look out for a likely landing spot." She hadn't even reached the wheelhouse before Dean Folan was shouting urgently, "Boat coming!" They went to the gunwale and peered ahead through the thin grey gauze of drizzle. The shape slowly resolved, and both of them watched it sail past with shocked astonishment. It was a paddle steamer which seemed to have ridden straight out of the 19th-century Mississippi River. Craft just like it were the inspiration behind Lalonde's current fleet of paddle boats. But while the Swithland and her ilk were bland distaff inheritors, utilizing technology instead of engineering craftsmanship, this Grand Dame could have been a true original. Her paintwork was white and glossy, black iron stacks belched out a thick oily smoke, pistons hissed and clanked as they turned the heavy paddles. Happy people stood on the decks, the handsome men in suits with long grey jackets, white shirts, and slender lace ties, their elegant women in long frilly dresses casually twirling parasols on their shoulders. Children ran about sporting gaily, the boys were in sailor suits and the girls had ribbons in their flowing hair.
"It's a dream," Jenny whispered to herself. "I'm living a dream."
The stately passengers were waving invitingly. Sounds of laughter and merrymaking rang clearly across the water. Earth's mythical golden age had come back to nourish them with its supreme promise of unspoilt lands and uncomplicated times. The paddle steamer was taking all folk of goodwill back to where today's cares would cease to exist.